The following podcast is a Dear Media production.
Welcome back to Probably a Podcast. But before we start, if you are really certain that your mom's not a hoe, if your mama ain't a hoe, then you have to come to one of my live shows. And I don't make the rules. You just have to come because you will giggle. You will laugh. You will drink a lot. Because last live show, we actually accidentally sold out of alcohol for the venue, which was really a feat that I love. So come to a live show. Giggle. We're coming to so many cities near you. We've got Milwaukee. We've got Kansas City. We've got St. Louis. We've got Indy. We've got Nashville. We've got Boston. We've got Philadelphia. We've got Pittsburgh. We are literally all up in your shit, and we're gonna have a great time doing it. It is going to be so fun. There's some crowd interaction. Like I said, just a lot of laughs. If you want to come by yourself, come by yourself. If you want to come with one of your girly pops, come with one of your girly pops. If you want to drag your husband there, that is also really fun, and I will make fun of them in the audience. So check out the link in this bio. Check out the link in my Instagram for this podcast. Get your tickets. They're like literally not expensive. They're like under $40. So come to a live show. Love you guys. Bye. Welcome back to Probably a Podcast. We have a very exciting guest here with us today, a friend of mine, a friend of James, an absolute icon in the eyes of all of my Instagram followers because I pimp him out like no other. It really is. It's getting a bit aggressive, but I really just can't stop. So please welcome to the Probably a Podcast stage, Alistair Stewart Bone, or as you guys know and love him, Ali.
Hello there. Thank you very much for having me on.
Ali is one of our favorite British friends who James has been friends with for a long time. Actually, we kind of get in a fight whenever we were inviting people to the wedding. Ali's obviously coming to the wedding. We were discussing, I don't remember why. Maybe it was who was sending the save the date email or whatever it was. And I was like, I'll go ahead and send it to Ali. And James is like, well, he's my friend. So, and I was like, no, he's my friend. So, and he was like, well, he was my friend first. And I was like, yeah, but he's my friend now. So we really kind of got in a fight about it.
That's news to me. We've been together for the past few days and you haven't shared that. So it's always nice to know that, you know, you're fighting over me.
Yeah, we're just fighting over being friends with you. I just adore you so much. I just think you're a great person. So naturally, I thought it'd be very fun. Ali is staying with us for a while now, honestly. A week.
Can't leave.
Best house guest ever. You guys, if you ever want Ali to come stay with you, he'll do all your dishes, he'll pay for your groceries. We keep being like, no, Ali, don't be crazy, like stay longer, but really, like, it's been fantastic. So
sweet of you to say. I'm loving it.
Glad you're here. Thank you for joining us on the podcast. I thought it'd be fun to get to know Ali a little bit better just because he's an incredible human being, but also it'd be really cool to get the male perspective from someone that I deem worthy of male perspective. On the podcast, I asked you guys a ton of questions. We'll deem the segment Ask Ali. And there were some good ones, you guys. You guys really fucking turned out for these. So we'll ask you a lot of great burning questions. But first, I would love to just intro Ali. Other than James and I both just being obsessed with you as a friend, You are a retired professional rugby player, which is so cool. I'm currently learning a little bit about rugby here and there. I'm not really diving all the way in, but a very impressive sport. If you guys are listening and not familiar with rugby, which I bet money that 99% of the people listening to this are not familiar with rugby. It is American football with no protective padding. So very difficult, very incredible. And I'd love to intro you a little bit. You're new to America. He just moved to DC. So what are we doing now, Ali?
Well, very fresh off the boat, really. I've only been here for 8 months, which has been a joy. There's probably no way of really...
8 months already.
I know. It's wild. It's flying by. I mean, that's basically the same time as James. It'll be a year very soon and you kind of wonder what's happened, where it's all gone. But there's no way of probably like making what I do sound that sexy. So I'm going to sound slightly corporate. But I moved over to DC with work. I'm in a sales role for a technology firm, sell a piece of software to law firms, consultancies. I love what I do and I'm sure we'll get into it a little bit, but feel very fortunate to kind of wake up every day happy to be doing what I'm doing. And I suppose the only like sexy part of it is I do a lot of wining and dining, which I really enjoy. And that for me is like kind of one of the big perks of the job. But yeah, that's kind of what's brought me over.
I love that. No, honestly, if I could do another job, people ask me all the time, what if it's ramen or tomorrow? What would you? I was like, I would just like go into sales. That I would just like love to wine and dine.
You're a natural salesperson.
Thank you so much, Ali. Okay, so talk to me more a little bit about how you got into. So actually, before this podcast happened, I know Ali on like obviously a personal level, but I wanted to get to know him, not even so much a professional level, but just like on a level that made sense to who you are as a person. And I obviously just have my understanding of you, which is just like a great lad, a strapping young gentleman. But realistically, you're a deep individual. And so you did... you were a professional rugby player. Mm-hmm. Well, you played rugby your entire life and then were lucky enough to see it on a professional level. So talk to me about that, because I listened to your podcast with Luke Wilson and it was called Mindset, which incredible podcast. You guys check it out on Apple Podcasts, Spotify. I was listening to it and it was his very first episode with Ali, and I would have assumed the guy had been podcasting for years. So really, really incredible podcast. Check it out. And you were talking to the concept of just how you had been a professional rugby player, professional athlete that then was injured and had to kind of find his way in the corporate world, which again, I always try to relate stuff back to my listeners. And I say very often on this podcast, quit your job at Google and make soap. So that can lend to just genuinely having an idea of what you're supposed to be doing your whole life and then having something cosmically come in and be like, what, skirt? Nope, you're doing something else. So what was that like for you?
I mean, I don't really know where to start with it. I suppose for background for everybody, like, as you mentioned, super fortunate to be able to play professional rugby. It was obviously like my lifelong dream. I mean, similarly to James, like you grow up, like you really hope that's what you're going to do. And then eventually you kind of get to that point and you're like, oh my gosh, I'm genuinely living the dream. Like,
doing
this is it. What I want to do, doing the thing that you've like dreamt of. And then all of a sudden, unfortunately, I had to retire due to concussion. It just comes to an end. And what becomes really difficult with that is you go from everything you know and you love disappearing overnight. And for me, it's really tricky. And like I spoke about this with actually Luke, is that you are defined in many ways by like who you are in that sort of sense. Like, I was Ali the rugby guy. That's what I do for a job. That's how my friends know me. That's how my family know me. And then overnight that's gone. You're like, okay, right. Like, where am I going to be going with life? What am I going to be doing? And that becomes a very difficult journey that I kind of then started and more than happy to kind of get into. But yeah, that's sort of a bit of the background to it, I suppose.
And it's so funny because as I was listening to the podcast and hearing you now, I'm like, Ali the rugby guy, I knew all along, because James and Ali actually grew up playing rugby against each other, right?
Yeah,
and
correct,
so yeah. I knew when I met you at the gym, I think was the first time when we were in London and we were going to the gym, and he was like, that's my friend Ali, like we played rugby together growing up, et cetera, et cetera. And I got to know you as Ali, and I mean, yes, sure, James had mentioned that you guys had played rugby in childhood together, but you had already had your job. You were just like a funny guy. You were like had a great personality. We had then gotten drinks with you, and I got to know you on a level that I quite literally, and no offense, but I don't associate you with rugby at all.
Probably for the best.
No, I just think it's funny because you live your whole life having these like innate ideas of your identity, and you're like, my whole life I was Ali the rugby guy, how could I possibly get out of that? But then here you are sitting here with one of your self-proclaimed good friends, and I didn't know you as that guy at all. So what would you say to someone who feels like, and this is removing sport or anything, just from a general sense of like, if you're talking to someone who feels like their identity is coming to an end and they have to reinvent themselves and they're feeling stressed or worried or like in a crisis of identity, what was your like process with that?
It's really hard. I think the biggest thing to realize is that you can't define yourself by something. It's very easy to be defined by Ali being the rugby guy, and that's my identity and that's what I do. But actually, there's so much more to each of us in so many different regards. And actually, if you went away and took, like, you're not going to do this, but did a poll from your family, your friends, whatever it is,
could do.
You could do if you wanted in modern day, put it up on Instagram, whatever. People probably come back with so many different things, like the very kind words that you're saying there. So for me, I think it was taking the time upon retiring to reflect on like, okay, these are certain things that I enjoy in life. And actually, what else do I do? Like, I really enjoy like the theatre and culture and food and wine. There's so many other elements to you as a person. And it's being able to kind of, I suppose, reflect on that and then go, okay, there are other parts of me that I can then start to move forward. And I think the other thing with what I went through, and it applies in so many different guises, is surround yourself with good people. Like, I was really lucky that I had great friends and family who supported me and all of that. And I think that really helped me with that whole element of like transitioning from being defined as this one person to then going into, I suppose, this entirely different world and getting into the corporate world, which was, yeah.
Well, you're also surrounding yourself with people who are able to remind you, like, Ali, we see so much of you that isn't just the sport that you played your whole life. So that is true, to have people in your life who are like, and I even tell Taylor and I, we have, you know, best friend constructive conversations all the time. And I'm like, you could do this, 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 this. And she's like, what? And I'm like, oh my God, you're so good at this. You're so good at that. You could, and she, and outsider looking in, sometimes it's hard to see that within ourselves because we become so fixated on what we know we're the best at, right? Like Taylor's like, I'm the best at being a mom. And then I'm like, oh, but you do this, you do this, you do this. It's so good. And she's like, oh, really? You think so? And I'm like, I know so. I'm literally your best friend. I know so. So like you said, surrounding yourself with people that can remind you of the other factors in your life that you excel at, that aren't just that like one track minded thing that we sometimes find ourselves in.
100%
is really important.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, if I flip it onto like, for instance, yourself, like obviously you're so outgoing, an incredible storyteller. Everyone knows the personality they see, but like people won't necessarily see you behind closed doors in terms of like the other skills that you have. I mean, you're obviously an incredible interior designer, by the way. That is a skill that is, you know,
second to none
in compared to other people.
That's so kind.
You're a great cook, like these sorts of things. And again, like it's not to like go and sort of like shine the light entirely on you on this one, but it's actually just recognizing there's so many other things that we're all made up of.
True.
And we're just some of the parts that surround us, and we can, I say, get into that kind of later on in other ways, but yeah.
It's true. I feel like we all, like as humans, tend to have a one track mind, and it's like, what's that saying that's like jack of all trades, master of none?
Yeah.
But like realistically, that is, we're not, some of us are lucky enough to be master, and you could go both ways. James also says like with work, sometimes you should focus in on the one thing you're really good at and give that a lot of passion and attention. But when we're trying to find our identity or searching for purpose or passion, like it's good to remember that we are so capable of being passionate and excelling at so many different things. So
yeah, 100%.
To not forget
those
things.
Like pulling up on that in terms of, like James saying, she's excelling one thing, but actually it's about finding the joy in life in terms of what you're doing. So,
absolutely.
You know, for me, rugby was the thing and what I loved and what I grew up doing. And then it's, without being like really corporate and boring, like it's actually one of my favorite topics when it comes to work, because the job I had when I retired from the rugby was genuinely really interesting. I was like really fortunate that a family friend essentially sort of shone the light on like a direction I should go. And I went into doing headhunting, and it was never going to be the long-term home. And actually very quickly I realized like, oh gosh, like this isn't actually something I truly enjoy. And that whole idea of, I don't know what you guys might call it, but like the Sunday scaries or like Sunday
we
blues.
We call it Sunday scaries.
Probably
the
same thing,
yeah.
Sunday blues. It was like all of a sudden after like 6 months that was kicking in. I was like, oh my gosh, like I didn't know what this was until
right.
now. And all of a sudden you're going, okay, like this is not a happy place to be in. And actually one of the things I suddenly realized was how important it is to find the love in what you're doing.
Yeah.
And when you find that love in what you're doing, it makes such a big difference to life.
Well, and so cheesy, so cliche, but cliches are cliche for a reason. You know, my dad grew up telling me all my life, like, love what you do and you'll never work a day in your life.
100%.
And that's, you know, obviously you can work hard, you can work passionately, but even speaking from producer Courtney, who's always here, love her to death, you are, you know, loving what you do every day with your production company and everything that you do. You're a perfect example of that. Like I can tell when you post your pictures on Instagram that you're obsessed with what you're doing, and even the hard work that you're putting in with like creating the space and doing everything at your podcast studio, you're like, I'm obsessed. So when you find joy in what you're doing, the hard work becomes enjoyable.
100%. Nice. And like you said, the saying that was it, quit Google and start selling soap. I might butcher that entirely for you, but
that's it.
Whatever,
that's it.
Whatever it
quit
is.
Quit your job at Google and start making soap.
But it's so true, because there are so many different things out there you can do. And it doesn't even have to be about like quitting and going like creating an entirely different business. You might be working in a corporate and go, oh, you know what? Like actually I might be far more interested in like X, Y, or Z role. And you can start doing that, and yeah, you'll find so much more joy from it. And even then, if you walk away from the role that you're doing, you start up something different, or you walk into a whole different like world, you'll find like that everything becomes so much easier.
Right, 100%. And also, I think it's just really important to note that British people do not say the word Z as Z, they say Z. Isn't that so funny? XYZ. James will be like, you know, we'll just do XYZ. I'm like, XYZ?
Yeah, but there's a lot of, I mean, if we're going to go down that one, there's so many
there
different
are
like,
trust,
words, cultural differences, all these sorts
we'll
of things.
We'll get there. We'll get there. New year, new me, springtime, everything's flourishing. What am I still not doing? I don't want to go to the grocery store. I don't want to do it. I still want to order Thrive Market because I love Thrive Market. I love all the healthy freaking groceries. I love how amazing it is. I love how they are slashing the prices from regular grocery stores. I'm just hitting you hot on the front end of this ad because I love Thrive Market. There's also a couple things that I've just become like addicted to that I can only get from Thrive Market. And I love it. I just love the food. They have way more than food. They got body products. They got kitchen products. They have all the food and pantry items you could possibly want. They've got makeup. They've got whatever you want. And some of my favorite brands they have are like Amy, Mommies, Four Sigmatic, Primal Kitchen. I love the Chia Mama, Honest Kitchen, and tons more. And by the way, I'm a real visual gal. So when I'm on Thrive Market's website, I love that they just show you the amount that you're saving right there under the groceries in red. Okay. So they even tell you the percentage off that it is. And you really do get so much better prices from Thrive Marketplace than you would at any normal grocery store. And then you also don't have to go to the grocery store because it comes right to your door. You can pick how often you want it. Like I was out of town, so I didn't get my Thrive order this last time. My last order, by the way, had a total savings summary of 24%. Like that's a lot. And they've also got a price match guarantee, which I love. So you can curate your shopping experience. You can pick whatever dietary preferences you have as well. They save you so much time, right? So you're not aimlessly walking through the grocery store. If you want gluten-free options, just type that in. Keto-friendly, type it in. Non-toxic cleaning supplies, whatever. Boom. Just say that and they will tailor the website pages to show you exactly that. Now, my favorite thing about Thrive Market is knowing that when you join, you're helping a family in need, all right? So they do a one-for-one membership matching program. So when you join, they give someone who needs help the groceries to feed their family. So I truly love when I see big businesses giving back like that. And y'all know I have a discount code for you guys, of course. So if you join Thrive Market today, you will get 30% off your first order plus a free $60 gift. Just go to thrivemarket.com/probably for 30% off your first order plus a free $60 gift. That's thrivemarket.com/probably. Thrive Market. .com/probably. Okay, so another question I had for you after listening to your podcast with Luke was, how do you get yourself out? Because it was a part of the podcast where you said, you know, albeit you never actually went to a doctor, you were like, realistically, the things I was experiencing and the feelings I was feeling, if I had been diagnosed, he probably would have told me, a professional would have said I was experiencing symptoms of depression. So after you were trying to find your way kind of in the workforce after rugby. So what would you say to someone, action steps, not just like, because I know you were mentioning having a positive mindset is everything. Yeah. And that's something I'm very lucky and fortunate, I feel like, to be able to really hone in on. I feel like I have a really positive outlook on life. But other than just being like, don't be sad, be happy. What are some like, because that's, you know what I mean?
It's
like
very easy to, it's very easy to sit there and be like, be happy. And like, well, yeah, I'm struggling to find what that happiness
right
is.
And right. If people are having like a chemical disturbance in their brain and like leading to thoughts of like depression or anxiety, and you're like, wait, don't be sad, just like be happy. People are like, wow, thanks so much. What a what a genuine great bit of advice. So like, what are some action steps you took to get yourself out of a rut? Like when you were feeling like you were in a rut, like what are some things you did to kind of navigate that outside of just like positive outlook?
I'm an individual who's been like very much like institutionalized. I went to boarding school, I went into professional sport, like life has always been very structured. And like when it all disappeared, you're suddenly like that, as I say, if I'd gone to the doctors, I probably would have found that I was depressed and spoken right about it. But I thought that the best thing for me would be like putting that structure in place. And I think for people, having some sort of daily routine makes a really big difference. Get up, make your bed. It's a simple thing, but it's a quick win. Like you've made your bed, that's all sorted. And then think about like other things that you can go and do that are actually actionable and that you've achieved. And again, I say like I was
always,
things like, you know, being, as I say, make your bed is a very simple thing to start off. I think exercise, like James has sit here and obviously go on about that as well, but like the physical and mental effect that has on you from a positive standpoint is unreal. Like all of the good
going
endorphins
on walks, dude, even if you
get out,
even if you live in, God forbid, London, and it's gray and it's rainy and it's cold, like knowing that you even just put, because you know what, this is embarrassing, but sometimes it was really hard for me to put on it. When it's cold outside, I'm like, ooh, yeah, it's so easy to go on a walk outside when it's warm.
Yeah.
But when it's cold and James is like, do you want to go for a walk? I'm like, short answer, no, absolutely not. I don't want to do that. But like the, even just the, this is embarrassing, but the feeling of I did it. Wow, look at me when I literally put on a coat and tennis shoes and I walk around the neighborhood. You just feel better afterwards.
100%.
You really do.
Because the other thing, like people get like so trapped in this whole mindset of like, oh, what am I doing like next week? What are the big goals? Where am I going with things? But actually the reality is you can't control much more than really the day in front of you.
Yeah.
And those small actionable things make such a big difference. And also like the other thing, maybe it's easy to say, but like really do think about who you spend your time with. Because that
listen,
makes
brother,
a big difference in life.
It ain't nothing that cut that bitch off. I mean, we say it all the time on this podcast, like you gotta surround yourself with good people.
100%.
You gotta, it's cool to be cordial with people. It's cool to keep friendships. I don't like burning bridges. I don't like any of that. But like my core group of people are humans that I want advice from and that I look at them and I look up to what they're doing and I want to be surrounded around positive people at all times. It's 100%. A huge factor into your day-to-day life. If you're surrounding yourself with negative people, low frequency people, if you leave a conversation or a lunch date or even just like a FaceTime and you feel like your cup was emptied even a fucking little bit, that it's just not great. It's miserable.
And then you're like not actually getting anything from it, and it just kind of helps, like, or doesn't help, it just seeds that, like you say, low vibrations, like negative energy, and you're just like, this isn't actually achieving anything from me. Yeah. Like, my brother and I actually talk about it quite a lot in terms of, we've got some fantastic friends, and maybe I shouldn't be saying this, but like sometimes you're like...
Guarantee they don't listen to the podcast.
Well, I don't know. You never know. You never know. And then you're kind of like, oh, like, did I come away from that and really feel that fulfilled in the conversation? It's not to say... And actually then start to get into that whole thing of like, I mean, we're going down a rabbit hole of friends, but like friends for a reason, friends for a season, friends for life, and like those sorts of things.
100%.
But yeah, hopefully that ramble does help, and there's like one or two things that people like take out of that in terms of how you can be happy. And I do just think, like, as I say, we said not to say it, but trying to, as best as possible, like, be positive around those things that you've achieved will just start to like permeate into various different things that you're doing in life.
Right. If you just like, and it's even like a lot of social media hype around romanticizing your life, right? And it's like, I'm romanticizing eating an orange today. But it's like, low-key, if you be romanticizing things in your life, it can help you so much to see the beauty in the everyday.
I do that, like, since we're like talking about the US. So I'm living in DC, as mentioned, like really enjoying it. Like, it's a beautiful city in its own right. I will cycle from where I live to the office. It's about a 15-minute cycle.
What do you do? Do you take like a little city bike?
I take like one of the little like electric line bikes, like bombing along like that.
Oh. You're gonna get murdered. You're gonna get murked, Ali.
I've got people like tooting the horn and all sorts. But as I go along, like talking about like that, like beauty and things, et cetera, et cetera, I go up past the Capitol building every morning. I drop down. I like see the monument and all these sorts of things. I'm like,
Gorgina,
this is like amazing. I never tire of seeing any of it, and it's the smallest of things. I'm like, how lucky am I? Like, the sun shining, whatever, it's like, this is beautiful.
Question, and I hate to be a hypocrite, not a hypocrite, what's the word I'm looking for, devil's advocate, do you think if you were cycling in London and you were passing the Big Ben and Buckingham Palace every day, you would feel just as romanticized? Or is it like this new fresh, like, look at these monuments?
Good question. I actually think, because I think I would. Okay. You just don't tire of it. Like, it's amazing seeing them. And then obviously the other positive comparative for London, like, not shit on London, is like the weather. So much better. So you've got the sun shining and you're like, oh yeah, like, I've got a smile on my face, serotonin coming into me. I feel great about this.
It's crazy. Like, I am a culprit of staying inside a lot, like, especially because like I work from my phone, I work from home. I love my home. So the other day, Taylor had texted me twice, like, God, what a beautiful day. James said, like, come inside. Allie, they'd been on walks. They're like, God, what a beautiful day. And I kept just being like, I know, right? But realistically, I had not stepped outside. And then it was like 4 p.m. and we're in the dreaded, horrid time of the year where it gets dark at 5, and I was like, all right, it's 4, I've just dicked around all day, I need to go do stuff. And then I looked at the clock, realized it was 4, realized I had not physically stepped outside once in the day, and I was like, you know what, I'm gonna go outside, it's 70 degrees, I'm gonna sit outside during golden hour and I'm gonna read my Kindle. And I did, and it was, you just can't put a price on just how lovely it is to just be in nice weather.
And down here is beautiful. I mean, I romanticize the south, I love the south, but it's even better. At least DC, the sun shines, but it's a bit chilly, but here is just a bit glorious. Windy.
Well, I'll tell you what, guys, I'm kind of like low-key, Ali doesn't realize I'm doing this, but I'm trying to like give him like Stockholm syndrome, where he like falls in love with his captors. And I'm like, ooh, I'll take the long way. We'll pass a couple hay bales and some horses, and I'll put Zach Bryan on. And literally, I actually thought to myself, I'm going to take the long way. I bet Allie will think it's so beautiful. And then I did this to James when we were first like visiting Franklin. I could have taken the like highway route, whatever, but I was like, oh, we'll take the long way. And James also fell for my fucking genius trap, which was, he was like, gosh, just being out here, just seeing the wilderness, just seeing the horses and the hay. And then I like put on a little Zach Bryan. He's like, just listen. And Allie said the same thing. He's like, wow, just lovely. And I'm like, what? This old place? I didn't even notice.
I was going to say, like, people might think you're joking. This is a 100% true story. I actually got out of the car and I was like, wow, I can really see myself being here. Like, the country music on, we went through the countryside. I was like, this is the life. This is the
Listen,
life.
I'm not saying I'm a mastermind, but I'm a mastermind. Okay, let's lighten things up a little bit. I'm going to throw you some softballs. Oh, no. I actually have an important question after this. Ooh. Okay, two questions. One, we're still getting deep with it. And then the second one, we'll start getting into some softball questions. But do you know what that is, softball?
Softball would be a sport.
Right,
yes. That women play.
That women play.
Largely, isn't it?
Largely, what? Yeah, yeah. Large women play softball.
No, no, not large. Cancel, Courtney, please hit that one out.
Cancel! No. Yeah, okay, softball. I just kind of forgot that you guys don't have baseball, so you probably don't know softball. Baseball is like women's version of softball. It's women's version of baseball.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm not going to lie. Not a lot of small women play it, though.
Well, that's your words, not mine.
I'm just saying. We could probably all like say that that's true. Like they're getting it, these women in softball. Anyone that plays softball, I am innately scared of you. Courtney, you played softball.
No, I think that's like above me, next level. I like middle school, but like not anything about
that. Yeah, but Courtney's actually, she's like a tiny little lady who is so fucking scary. Like, you know what? I bet there are some people listening to this is like, fuck that. I'm petite and I played softball and you are the scariest ones. You are the ones that we're the most scared of.
Deep aggression coming from yourself. Yeah,
actually, I take everything back. Petite woman that plays softball, I'm so frightened of you. Okay, anyways, I'll give you some softball, which means like lobbed questions.
Cool, nice.
It's an American saying. I'll tee you up. Okay, so first though, I wanted to ask you because this is important and it does kind of go back into quit your job at Google and make soap, because a lot of people would say, I can't quit my job at Google and make soap, Shannon. I'm 28 years old. I'm 42 years old. I hate my job at Google. I want to make soap, but how could I start a new career at this point in my life when everyone else is starting out making soap is 21, 22. They're at their prime. What would you say? Because you did that. You retired from rugby, not, you know, intentionally, just due to injury. And then you started this career path at 28, you said?
Yeah, roughly.
So did you ever feel that way where you were like, how could I start? Everyone else is so much younger than me. Like, what am I doing? Did you feel like that was a leg up or did you feel like, what the fuck am I doing?
I think it's only on reflection that you realize it as a leg up. At the time, you're like, all your peers, like, and it'd be exactly the same whether you're in the UK, US, wherever you are, people have finished university, college, they've gone on and they've been working for like 3-4 years. All of a sudden you're going from, I was doing the rugby, which is, whilst it was a career, it's got, well, on the surface of things, like, would have no reason why you'd then be in the corporate world. But actually there's a huge amount of transferable skills that I was able to get. But I suppose the point being is that whatever you're doing at the moment, you'll have learned loads of different things.
True.
And actually you've got to sit down and probably like reflect on that and maybe even write it out. But to then go and apply for something else, you're actually well ahead of the curve.
True.
And you've got so many other experiences that you can draw upon and have those conversations with people on a completely different level. So I don't know, my advice definitely would be that you should, you know, probably take confidence in who you are and what you're doing and the fact that you could probably go into and absolutely smash it.
Yeah. And take so many nuggets from like things that don't make, like, okay, if we were quitting our job at Google per se and we wanted to make soap, imagining actually that's more of like a self-employed venture, but let's just say you wanted to go to a company that was making soap, you could definitely take tidbits from your time at Google and apply it to your workforce in making soap. So don't discredit anything, no matter how different the careers are, rugby to selling like
software,
there are things you can take from it. So don't discredit the spider webs in between the two take from.
There are and also like sit down with people and like talk about it, because there'll be things that people recognize in, like we were talking about earlier, people recognize skills in you that you don't realize. And you're like, oh, like I can go and do that and I could apply it like elsewhere.
Right.
Also, sometimes it's like so much easier, like if you're sort of in the darkness of like working out where you're going to go and what you're doing, sometimes someone else, I say, can just open up that thought process. That's what happened to me. Like, I had no idea what the fuck I was going to do after rugby. I was like so lost. And it took a conversation with a family friend who was like, oh, I think I'd be really good at what I'm doing. Like, why don't you come and have a few conversations? And like one conversation leads to another conversation leads to a job. And you're like, oh, okay.
Wait, I've just done great at this. And now I have a job. Cool. Yeah. Okay. All right. Let's go to some softer questions. Like, first of all, another great thing about Allie, an amazing house guest, does the dishes, grocery shops, but he is the technical term is WSET.
Yes.
What does that stand for?
Wine Spirit Education Trust. That was testing me. I was worried I was going to like flop.
That's an easy one. Allie, you should know that because he's a level two. He's a Wine Spirits and Educational Trust.
Yeah.
Level two, which is really hard because I actually, so basically it's to get your sommelier certification.
Yeah.
I knew a guy, I went on like a first date with a guy when I first moved to Nashville. I was 21 and he was like, oh my god, it was so obvious. We like went on this first date and he brought his like wine flashcards to the first date and was like, when I got there he was like, oh sorry, I'm just kind of going through, and he like put them away and I was like, what are those? Like, you're a grown adult with flashcards. Obviously, I'm going to ask. And he was like, oh, I'm actually, you know, applying for my sommelier course. I was like, no way. I didn't know anything about wine. I literally didn't even drink at that point. Mm. And he was like telling me how hard it was. And then I remember he drove, paid all this money, drove to this place, and then he didn't get a certification and he failed like three more times. So really impressive to be a level two, because there's only, what, four levels?
Yeah, there's four levels, and then you kick on into like being your top sort of sommelier and all those sorts of things. So
really impressive. Okay, what's your favorite wine?
And
how did you get into it?
Well, I'm a massive foodie. Like, I absolutely love food and wine. Like, when I was retired from the rugby, I was like, oh,
just ate and drank.
Sort of just ate and drank, and like I was a bigger boy than I am now. and I was like, right, well, what do I want to do? Like, where do I want to go with things? And I was like, oh, it'd be quite interesting to get into the world of wine. That was kind of the journey. I was like, okay, well, if I'm going to do this, and I should probably get some form of qualification.
Love.
So went down that route and absolutely loved it, found it fascinating, and then realized actually I had other skills that I could apply elsewhere. And
can you make good money doing that? Were you like, I'm going to quit being a professional athlete and I'm just going to fuck around and drink wine all day?
Well, this was actually really funny to say that. This was a consideration where I was a bit like, okay, I'm 28. I'm going to have to start, like, my life is going to flip upside down, and I'm going to have to, like, do the late nights, probably not a great deal of money to start with. And eventually, like everything, if you're enjoying what you're doing, you're successful at it, the money will come. So yeah, I was just like, oh, it'd be a really cool thing to get into, and then never really pursued it any further. But I do appreciate my...
Still very impressive to be a level two.
Thank you. It's cool. Like, I still maybe in time will actually go into doing it. I think, like, long term, I could see myself being in restaurants, maybe owning them, working in front of house.
Oh my god, you guys, he's gonna own a restaurant. You guys all settle down. He's gonna own a restaurant. He's gonna be a little sommelier. Okay, what's your favorite, like, what's a go-to wine? Give me the place it's from, and give me the color that it is. I'm an expert,
I don't know where we're going. I'm gonna give a recommendation on two whites, simply because I think that's probably maybe what people might prefer, but depending, no, never know. There's a
Do
French...
Do you think girls like whites more?
I think that's a loaded question, but...
You're not going to get cancelled. I say most fucked up shit on this podcast.
No. I think on the whole, like, people definitely go for white. Like, okay. That is a typical... Yeah, that's definitely your typical go-to. I mean, if you're in the UK and the sun is shining, the girls love the rosé.
Same, brother.
Well, you might not... So there's a saying, it's quite funny, like, there's two sayings, I suppose, or ways that people refer to it. One is Lady Petrol.
Lady Petrol.
The other one is Bitch Diesel.
Bitch Diesel. Oh my god, I love that. Oh, we've got to start saying that. Yeah, I just want to head to Restoration Hardware, get a couple glasses of Bitch Diesel. Wait, oh my god, see, you know what? I've really got to start hanging out with more British girls.
Yeah, I mean, they love it. They get tanked up on
Bitch
it.
Bitch Diesel.
But yeah, what do I enjoy, like, a Picpoul, which is a French white wine, very nice. Or Riesling, which is actually typically more German.
Riesling, isn't that like Moscato?
It's not as, yeah, you're kind of getting down to slightly sweeter ones, but I'm personally am a big fan of it. So those would be my recommendations on the old white.
Wow, that's great. You know what? I think if I was in a motorcycle gang, I would go by the name Bitch Diesel.
Bitch Diesel. It's absolutely brilliant. It resonates so much more over here because, like, Lady Petrol is like a softer, more polite way of it. Bitch Diesel is like Bitch Diesel.
Well, also, like, girls don't call gas petrol. I only know what petrol is because James always be like, oh, we need to get some petrol.
Yeah, exactly.
It's springtime. Honestly, not really, but it's like so close. We have to just pretend, okay? And so what am I doing? I am spring cleaning, baby. I'm spring cleaning in a place that you wouldn't really expect. And I'm doing it in my kitchen because it's time to throw away all of your toxic cookware, all right? We can't be cooking with no toxic things. But here's the thing. I'm like so obsessed with my kitchen. If you follow me on Instagram or any sort of platform, you know that my kitchen renovation was my baby, my pride and joy. And it's all green and I'm obsessed with buying things that just like fit the aesthetic of my kitchen. So there's nothing better than Caraway. Caraway has every single one of your cookwares that you need. They have every single color that you need, all the most perfect shades. And here's the thing, like I said, non-toxic. So I like to cook. James is a better cook than me. I'm not gonna lie to you, but we love to cook. We love to try new things, new spring recipes, new fall recipes, and Caraway just makes the experience so much better because the kitchen looks so pretty. They're easy to store. They are really easy to keep. If you don't have a place to store, like if you live in New York City or somewhere like that and you don't have a place to put your pots and pans, Caraway is so gorgeous. You could just leave it on the stove because it's that aesthetically pleasing, all right? So Caraway's Home's non-toxic kitchenware features a chemical-free ceramic coating, so food can be prepared with peace of mind that no hard-to-pronounce chemicals, y'all know how to not know big words, will be leached into your healthy ingredients, all right? And all sets come equipped with complimentary, easy-access storage solutions to keep your kitchen nice and tidy. So ditch the chemicals with Caraway. Like I said, it's easy to cook on them too. Ceramic's naturally slick surface means that there's minimal oil or butter that's needed. You just have easy, like I cook eggs, I'm not kidding you guys, they just slide right off the pan. We love to see that, okay? You know when you're trying to make a fried egg and then all of a sudden it turns into scrambled eggs? You don't have to do that with Caraway. So it's well loved. Over 65,000 people have rated 5 stars about their Caraway kitchen. So now it's time for you to try it for yourself. Visit carawayhome.com/probably to take advantage of this limited time offer for 10% off your next purchase. This deal is exclusive for my listeners. So visit carawayhome.com/probably or use code probably at checkout. That's carawayhome.com/probably. Non-toxic cookware made modern. All right, we're gonna discuss first and foremost, and a question that I love asking James and just in general anyone from London, we're gonna talk about some immediate differences, or what is something culturally from Americans versus British culture that you just, this person wrote this and it's a good way to put it, that just makes you giggle. Things that just make you giggle culturally.
The thing that, honestly, the first thing that struck me and I heard was, so if you're holding two glasses, you're a night out, you've got two drinks.
On a night out, like on alcohol. A night out.
I mean, it could be anywhere, but typically alcohol. In the UK, that would be called double parked. And someone turned to me and they're like, you're double 50. I was like, sorry, excuse me. I like, honestly almost choked on my drink.
Excuse me.
I was like, I mean, who's double fisting? It's not really common that people are double fisting. I mean, what are you on about? And then realized they were talking about,
let me tell you, Ali, parked. Just one fisting is not that common.
Any form of fisting is probably pretty rare.
If you're fisting, I don't know you. I don't know you.
I've never come
maybe I want to get to know you, but I don't know you. And
it's quite the feat.
Double fisting would be jarring to hear, I think. You're right.
I think it would be, yeah.
Yeah, it means just painful. Two beverginos.
But it's two beverginos. That one was the one that, like I say, really that's caught me by funny. Surprise and made me chuckle.
Double parked. I think James's sister told me one time I was double parked and I was like, what? I don't even have a car here.
Something so much more like, it's just, you know, softer.
Let's talk about Ali's absolute obsession, love, and affair with the Great British Bake Off.
You caught me watching it last night.
I walked out to say goodnight to Ali. I was reading my book because, as you guys know, I read now, so I'm like literally better than all of you. And I realized that it was getting late. We were about to head to bed, and I heard the TV on, and I asked James. I was like, "Is Ali still out there?" He's like, "Yeah, he's watching a show." So I went out there, and I don't know what was I expecting you to be watching? I don't know. Maybe you're a movie buff. You love movies, yeah. So I thought maybe there'd be a film on, and there is just an absolute. Just delightful looking tart with some custard on top, some beautiful little floral accents and icing. And I was like, good night, Ali, what you watching? And he was like, oh, Great British Bake Off. And I was like, oh, he's like, watch it every night. No, you didn't say you watch it every night. You said you've seen every episode.
I've seen every episode of every series from the moment it started. You guys, it's now on Netflix, so watch it.
Yeah, because it used to just be like a local British baking show on like Channel 4 in London, and now it's on Netflix and you're obsessed with it. And what did you tell me?
I don't know what it is. Funny enough, actually, after your room it happened. So no. I get really invested into it because you see the characters, you know how much it means to them, and you know they basically get, it's a baking show, they get voted off every week and you get really invested into them. And I'm not gonna lie, like I shed a tear every week. I mean, like Not bawling my eyes out. I'm not like crying like something emotional and jarring's really happened, but I will cry both sort of happy tears and sad tears. The fact that somebody's left and someone is so happy. Like there's on the current series at the moment, there's this deaf girl and she ended up getting Star Baker and she couldn't have been happier. And I was like, this is slightly melting my heart. I would say it happened shortly after you left the room. My eyes were welling up.
He told me, he said, I've seen every single episode. I said, oh my God, every single episode has been on for a long time. He goes, yep, I shed a tear after every episode. And I go, Ali. He was like, no, I do. I really do. Oh, you shed a tear after I left. Yeah,
you missed it. Really? It's actually good you probably didn't come in whilst I was crying. You'd be like, what are you doing?
You're no, right. Yeah, I'm like, what are you doing? I'm a huge, huge, huge crier. Shows, movies, books, anything. Like, I'm just such an empath that like, I'll literally cry. Oh, I'm actually a sympathy crier. If I walked on the street and someone was crying and I had no idea why they were crying, I'd be like, oh no.
I start crying as
Why
well.
Are you crying? What was, I know
what was
I'm
the,
crying.
What was the first film that you ever cried at? Do you remember? Do you have any recollection?
The very first film I ever cried at, probably fucking Lion King. That shit gets dark so upsetting. Fast. Oh my God, when he's begging his dad to wake, he's like, wake Scar, up, yeah. wake up. I mean, that's devastating.
It rocks you, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Mine was E.T. when E.T. got sent home.
That is also sad. What's the one with the dinosaurs?
Land Before Time.
Oh, straight Epic. To the fucking jugular as well.
Yeah.
Cried. You know what? Some of those shows are fucked up. We shouldn't be showing kids that. yeah, that definitely. And now I just cry at everything. Like James is not a crier. And so he's actually very most. No, that's not true. I was going to say most British men, but like you and James are both like very emotionally mature and like outwardly open emotionally. And so James will definitely like, he will cry. He's not like, I don't cry, I'm from London. But like, he is like, Shannon, you cry at quite literally everything. And I'm like, I'm just, it's so sad.
Yeah, but I think it's really important to, I mean, it's going down a whole different angle with this, but like that, being, we were speaking about it the other day around a different topic in terms of like more so British men of a certain age being very closed off to emotion, and actually everybody trying to, you know, in globally now probably trying to open people up a lot more. And like, I know, like I was mentioned a few times with the rugby seems to be like coming up quite a bit, but after rugby, when I was started like working in London and you start finding your new people and this sort of thing, I met these incredible group of individuals through cold water swimming, which I absolutely love.
Yeah.
Anyway, you know, one of the things that I would do with a lot of them is like breath work and these sorts of things. And actually shortly after I'd had my last sort of long-term relationship end, we had this like group breath work session. It was really nice. And anyway, I'm lying there and it's one of those things that can be either kind of psychedelic when you do breath work, or it can be very, very cathartic. And for me, it was very cathartic. And I was lying there and honestly like tears just streaming down my face because you're just processing everything. And I remember getting to the end of it and I was still lying there. And actually one of the guys who's a dear friend of mine just rolled over and just held my hand and like lay there with me. And the reason I tell the...
I'm about to cry. No, I'm not kidding.
The reason I tell you the story is I just think it's like so important to be open to those emotions that you're feeling. Like bring it around to like being a little bit more like amusing. It's like, I feel that when I'm watching Great British Bake Off and I, you know.
I think, you know, it's a beautiful thing to be an empath and you just feel what other people are feeling. Yeah. And that's really nice. And as speaking from a woman, that's just nice to have a male be able to like understand how you're feeling. Actually, there were so many questions that I wasn't able. We're going to get to the Ask Allie segment now. And there were so many questions that I was like, I can't ask that because Allie will be like, what do I think about a girl on a period? Oh, I hope she has a warm water bottle, enough cookies and crumpets, and any time off she wants. Like, I'm like, I got to like ask some questions that won't be that are Allie approved. Okay, so let's start off. Oh,
by the way, we're going in quite blind to this, just for people. Yeah, I haven't been prepped on these questions.
I didn't give you any like prep because they're just like easy. Like people are like, oh, what's your favorite? Some of them were silly. Like, what's his favorite nail polish for a girl to wear? What if a girl toots on the third date? Like, I'm like, I gotta just look at my questions now. Okay, so, this is a very common thing that girls say in regards to life in general. I just think it's more of a female term. And I think it applies a lot to, they use it a lot in the sense of like dating and relationships and situationships. You guys use that term, right?
Yeah,
situationships.
Of course.
Okay. Yeah. So basically, if it's not a fuck yes, it's a fuck no.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
So do you guys think that applies? She says, does this actually work in a girl's favor? Does like this space actually work in a girl's favor? Like, do you think if this girl wasn't innately getting from you like, oh my God, this is a fuck yes from Allie, do you think she should decide to go with the phrase it's a fuck no and she should, you know, move on to other things?
I would say no, based on the fact that if I look at myself, I know that sometimes it can take a little bit of time to fully open up. Like,
yeah.
Whilst, you know, I am in touch with emotions and on the whole a very open individual,
yeah.
I do know that, you know, when getting to know somebody, there's that element of like a little bit of time where you're warming up to each other.
Yeah.
You're feeling, of course, there are moments when you're like, oh my God, this is the person. And you just bounce off everybody. And like we were talking about the other day, like that whole energy and how you feel around people, like there's a lot to be said around that. But I wouldn't say you go, oh, it's a fuck no, I'm getting out of here straight away because he's not giving me everything I want. Like, give it a little bit of time and everybody knows there's like, you'll just know. I think you just, to that energy thing, you'll know, you'll get the feeling.
Well, we were, Allie and I were discussing about how like human beings are basically just like balls of energy. And like you, that's why like when you have this moment when like, you know, there's like silly moments where you like touch a guy's hand or you have a conversation with someone or a date with someone and you're like, oh my God, I just know this felt the same. He was feeling the same. I was feeling the same. That is because we are like all literally energy. And yeah. So we react to each other's frequencies and other 100%. Energetic feelings. So
100%.
All right, what are your thoughts on why men don't seem to make the first move anymore?
Ooh, that's interesting, because in the UK, and like I'm speaking on London's behalf, it's very much about the man making the first move.
It
which is wild. And I was actually on a date before I moved over here, and we got onto this topic like fairly deeply, and she was like, oh, guys never approach anymore, like they won't approach in the bar, like these sorts of things. It's always like over text or WhatsApp, or
do you think
like
it has to do with apps?
I think it's partially Hinge, but the other thing I said to her, I was like, the reason that like men aren't necessarily approaching, I know this is going against essentially what I said, but aren't approaching in a bar, is because there's this like negative cycle. Like you could look like, I don't know, Travis Kelce and be like a great looking guy, and everyone, assuming people would find him attractive, I feel like he's a
hot guy right now.
Or you could be, you know, James Middleton, obviously a very attractive guy, and he would approach you in the bar, and like there'd just be this kind of initial like standoff. This is the way that the UK girls are 100%. Or you could be like ugly, but people aren't going to be receptive to it. But like, bring it around to here. Why do I think people aren't necessarily approaching in the same way? I think the apps are an issue. I think people find it very easy to hide behind a screen and do it in that way. But also I think one of my cultural differences here is women are actually far more open to being forward and approaching you. And that's really caught me by surprise.
So the guys have just gotten used to that.
So I think there could be an element of that, is that like people are expecting it to come to them, and maybe it's slight arrogance. I don't really know. But
I've been at bars enough now in the UK that I watch it happen. I watch men just go up to women and approach it. I'm like, and I am like, oh, that wouldn't happen in America. Before I was engaged and had a ring on my finger, men would come up to me even when James was there. Now, not when it was just me and him, but when we were in group settings, if I happened to walk to the bar and grab a drink, like really, men immediately, not like, oh my God, men are flocking over me, but I just mean like,
they would come
up to you and say like, hey, like, who are you here with? What are you doing? And I would be like, oh, my boyfriend over there. And then they're very respectful and like, leave you alone. But like, I'm like, oh my God, that would have never happened in America.
Yeah. It's funny though, because like, as I say, like in the UK, it like becomes like this slightly negative cycle where a lot of men will just like be battered off by these women. And it's like, well, obviously I'm not then going to approach you again if you want that. But I don't know. I honestly think like here, it's so easy that people, and it, again, like probably of an age group to a degree as well, like just find being behind a screen so much easier. Mm-hmm. Like I've actually think I've got better at potentially approaching people here, because I'm a little bit like, what's the worst that's
might as
happen?
Well, yeah, you should, because obviously girls aren't expecting it, so do it.
Yeah.
Okay, so to that point, someone said, what is the most attractive way for a woman to approach you in the wild, and what is something that you would suggest they don't do? Like, what's something you've seen where you're like, ooh, no?
I think, oh gosh, that's really
like what would be attractive if a girl just like walked up to you at a bar and said like, what are you drinking, or like,
I think just I coming like up shirt. And like, yeah, compliments are always nice to receive, because it's like a very like natural icebreaker, but I think like coming up with like some sort of good conversation starter, and that something that's naturally going to make, okay, all of a sudden like I'm engaged to this person, I'm like talking to them about it, that is a really good way. And like, you can definitely have like stock ones in your mind. Like I reckon it could even be as simple as like, what brings you here this evening? Because it naturally opens up to being like, oh, I'm here with my buddies and we're doing this and we're doing that. And like all of a sudden it starts opening the conversation. In terms of things not to do, I've definitely observed it as like a little bit of like the stalk, like people, you're going from like one place to another and you kind of notice this person's within your vicinity quite a lot, but they haven't made the approach. Like that is definitely like a no, because the moment you come out to me, I'm going to be a bit like, okay.
Oh no, Allie, I was literally just about to be like, something that's worked great for me in the past.
Well, the casual stalk. But maybe that's because they haven't noticed
you. Okay, here's what I was going to say. I was going to say something I used to do is if like, because in America, like girls or guys don't always come up to you to make the first move. But if I've seen that a guy like has made eyes at me twice, or we've caught each other's attention, or maybe he hasn't caught my attention at all, if he's like at the bar, I'll walk over to the bar and I'll either order another drink that I don't need, or mindlessly grab a napkin or something. Yeah. And then I'll just like wait until either I hear something he says in a conversation, then I'll be like, oh, something, something. Or I'll be like, I'll honestly, this is maybe sounds kind of desperado now that I think about it, but like, I'll like reach over him and be like, do you mind handing me a napkin? Even if it was like so much easier for me to go to the other side to get a napkin. And like, I'm opening the door. Do you want to like be like, yeah, of course. What are you drinking? Like, and that has worked for me in the past.
But that's not a casual store. Like, I've seen sort of people like follow them around a little bit. Like you've like kind of intentionally, you've intentionally gone like to that person and like, okay, you might not have opened up, but you've done your little move of how am I going to get them to engage with me? I have seen like, you know, be it like you're at one bar, you move to another bar.
That's like...
Not necessarily like leaving the, I mean, within like a just Barstool Sports, obviously there the other night, like staying within the same vicinity, I've seen people follow. It's like, just approach, otherwise it's just a little bit weird.
Okay, I could see that. Yeah. That's kind of, that's odd. I wouldn't just like follow and then like not say a word. Yeah, okay, yeah. Okay. All right, so that's a no-no. What about an ideal message for a guy to receive on a dating app? Now, there were so many dating app questions, and we're going to get into it, but like, what's like a good message to get, if you were on Bumble, for instance, that you have to get a message from a girl first?
So, I'd actually reply on this. Like, it really makes me laugh. Like, I recently got back onto, well, I actually only use Hinge, but
Hinge,
the amount of people, particularly when I had Bumble for a bit, and it was like, don't say hey, or like, as you're also on Hinge, be like, don't open with hey, and the amount of girls who just be like, hey, how you doing? It's like, well, that's not particularly interesting. Like,
you had your whole profile to look at, so like, why don't you profile, say something
like talk about something to do with like whatever it might be, the fact that someone's wearing a nice jacket, you like their smile, it's really funny that they, I don't know, I've got a thing about like the diamond industry, and that I think the fact is,
why did you get something about the diamond industry?
Because it's an interesting, I think it's a really interesting fact. Anyway, if they were to stop mining diamonds as of today, there would be still 500 years worth in the vaults. Yeah,
is that on your Hinge profile?
Yeah. But it's like,
I'm like, where is this coming from?
But like, it's like, why don't you open up with that? Like, how interesting. Like,
yeah.
Like, just find something.
Well, no, and that's funny. You could be like, are you like planning on buying me some diamonds sometime soon? Yeah, like diamonds on the first day.
Yeah, exactly. You can find like, how do you know that? Are you in the diamond industry? You're going to bring me a bracelet? Like,
that's funny.
There's so many things that you can like work off. So I guess the short advice is like, put a tiny little bit of thought into it, that this person has, particularly if you're using the dating apps, like there's something there that you can go off of that's like a nice little hook, and just throw that out there.
Right. Okay. I agree. One thing about my clothing is I always care what's underneath it, and you guys are going to be obsessed. Now, I have loved Maiden Form for a very long time, but get a taste of M, which is a hot new collection of craveable intimates from Maiden Form, which again is a brand with a whole lot of history. They've been around forever. They've been around actually since the very first bras, and now they're bringing you a new kind of classic, the chicest basics you have ever seen. I am obsessed, truly obsessed. M is a collection from Maiden Form, so a brand with over 100 years of innovation and category leadership, okay? So they get it. They wrote the book on bras, all right? And M is their next juicy chapter. So you gotta feel it to believe it. Trust me when I tell you, this stuff is yummy, buttery, soft fabric. Taylor was obsessed with how soft it was. It feels so much more expensive than they are because it is great style that won't break the bank. And honestly, it's just really flattering. I put on this set, so they have like panties, bras, whatever, and I put on this set and James was like, wow, that is so flattering. And I'm gonna tell you, James doesn't ever really comment on my basics. And he really was like, that is so flattering, because these designs are on trend, but they're made from stretchy, comfy fabrics in incredible colors that just suit everybody's body. So M can be worn as innerwear or outerwear. You can style it to your taste, create looks that serve for everyone or for no one to see, okay? So it's really, really just the best ever for basics. Like, I am telling you, I wear them under clothes. I wear them just as little like workout tops. Like, they are the best. So if you guys want to try out these intimates, then get yourself some Maiden Form. Just visit maidenform.com and use probably pod 20 at checkout for 20% off your first purchase. That's maidenform.com. Use probably a pod 20 for 20% off your first order. All right, thoughts on, okay, this is a big question. Got asked this in a lot of different capacities and ways. So basically people want to know, and don't answer because I know you know how James and I met. So don't answer based on that.
Okay.
You will not offend me. Just making sure my nipple has not been out this entire show. You will not offend me. Okay, thoughts on sleeping together on the first date?
I think that it can give the wrong impression.
Oh.
Because.
Okay.
Well, it's an it comes.
We had a conversation the other day about kissing on the first date, and I said girls that have like a stiff, stickler attitude about it, they're like, sorry, I don't kiss on the first date. I'm like, if you actually aren't feeling it, that's fine. But if you really wanted to kiss a guy after spending 2 hours with him, like we're in our like 20s, 30s, like you can kiss a guy.
Yeah.
It's not that deep.
We were talking about it because I'm like not very, I was basically telling a slightly like awkward story because I'm not actually very good at necessarily reading it. And in this scenario, I was like,
sure, you are.
I'm going to be honest. I really want to give you a kiss. And they basically were like, well, I don't really do it on a first date. I was like, okay.
Do you think if she really wanted to kiss you, she would have just kissed you?
I probably agree. I think she was sort of maybe being polite, but anyway, it is what it is. Like, you know, being there and being essentially rejected, it's fine.
It's fine. We're fine. Everything's fine.
On the sex thing, the reason I think it on an energy level, like you, like if it's going that way and it feels that way, then like obviously go with it because there's no point if to that whole kinetic energy, balls of energy. Like you can just feel it if it's moving that direction. Obviously, do it. But I think like if there is, and I've heard a few stories like men's being slightly like pushy around a scenario, whatever it is, and you're feeling like you are obliged to it, definitely don't, because it does give the wrong impression. Or if you're kind of going into it, if you're dating in a serious manner that you're thinking you really want to be meeting somebody
totally
that is, you know, going to be a long-term partner, I'd say it can, again, if you think this person's a good person, you end sleeping the first date, it can just give that wrong impression of like, oh, well, she's just down to fuck.
She's down to fuck. Here's the thing, I think if you met a guy and decided to go on a date with him, I think maybe... And this is speaking from Shannon, who I know, I literally know you guys. I'm marrying a man that I had a one night stand with, but I did not meet James with the intention of going on a date with him. We did not plan a date. He did not ask me on a date. I never thought I would see this gorgeous once in a lifetime man ever good in my life. So I was like, I'm obviously going to fuck him. I can't not. But I think like if you, my stance, whenever I was like outwardly dating, and I know everyone says this, and a dear friend of mine, Tinks, she has a box theory. We are bringing it up, guys. She has this theory that basically men put you in a box from the moment they meet you, and they're either going to want to date you or they're going to just want to sleep with you. And they make that assumption pretty early on. So sleeping with them on the first date wouldn't deter them away from like dating you regardless. And to her point, I think that's true, but I don't think that sleeping with guys on the first date, that's a planned first date that you like, you know, he came pick you up, he met you for dinner. Like, I do see your point that's like, maybe you wait a little bit just to kind of let them know your intentions aren't just to fuck.
Yeah, obviously, if you meet someone in the wild, it's, you're just kind of going to go with it. And you guys are an amazing example of that. But, you know, I just think, I try to take everybody on face value. And if a scenario arose where I was asleep with someone on the first date, I personally wouldn't put somebody in a box, particularly if I've enjoyed their company. I wouldn't sort of be like, well, that's how this person is and that's the way that it's going to go.
No, her theory is that regardless if you sleep with him or not, he's already put you in a box. So if he sees you after meeting you and he thinks, I would like to go on another date with this girl, sleeping with you won't actually deter him from wanting to go on another date with you.
Maybe. I don't know. I don't think it applies to me, but then like maybe I am...
Yep.
Looking at it from a slightly different angle. Like, I just don't think, I never look at someone and be like, well, I just want to sleep with them. And that's because I find people I find people fascinating. And for me, dating is so interesting because you get to meet these amazing individuals and you have these great conversations. And if it goes down the route of something physical, you're like, okay, great. But that whole idea of dating is like, you get to spend some time with somebody interesting who's going to give you a different perspective on life. They've got a different story.
Yeah.
So I think it's quite,
Well, listen, there's also something to be said, and I'm so thankful for the way James and I's relationship transpired. Obviously, like, it's not like we lived in the same city and we could have gone on 7 dates before, but there's that like really like that pent up sexual energy that's so exciting as well. Like when you're getting to know someone and your energies are right on cue with each other and you go on a first date, a second date, and you know that on like the third date you could have slept with him because you guys are totally feeling it. But like there's something really sexy about waiting too. And like then the point where you guys finally do, you're like, oh my gosh, like we're both have wanted to do this for so long. That's also like, there's something to be said about that.
100%. 100%.
Okay. So what are some important first impressions?
Look after themselves.
Okay.
So it's not just about like being done up, but I think like clearly have maybe like cared about, I'm going to say actually how they look. So I say it's not necessarily about being like, for first impressions, maybe I need to like important first impressions. I'm now thinking, I'm actually going
to
go.
He doesn't want dirt under your nails, ladies. He wants you to take care of yourselves.
Yeah, I think, yeah, like looking after yourself is something that's really important. I think, I don't know what other questions there might be, but like for me on that, those first impressions, it's actually like, can you hold somebody else's like gaze? Are you actually able to look at them in the eye when you're having that conversation? Are you actually stimulating? Like for me, that's something that's really important. It's like, can you, it's not about like being able to sit there and talk about like Einstein, but it's like, can you have a good conversation around like worldly topics?
That's not small talk.
No.
Right.
Like 100%.
Nobody wants small talk.
Are you spending your time on your phone? Like, is that what something that's important
to
you?
That's
like on your date. Like that's not a good look on the first date.
That's actually we should have just been like, what are some people said, what are some red flags on a first date? Maybe
we can
just
get
go
into
that
as well. Yeah, because like the first impression thing is, well, what was the,
it's really individualized. First impressions are based on the person. So like, I guess I could say like, what are some things that would give you a bad first impression on a date, like a red flag on a first date?
Yeah, that's definitely easier to answer. For me, the first one, I butchered the answer, so apologies.
No, it's fine.
But I think people on a first date in terms of like negative is the phone thing for me is like a really big, like if you're spending your time on your phone, like you feel like you've got somewhere else to be at that moment in time. It's like, well, you obviously haven't got the time to give to me. Even if it's like half an hour or whatever, like that's something that I think is negative.
Yeah.
I think being like self-absorbed, not being able to open up and have a conversation about the other person, and actually be like actively interested in them, because it's not, I want to talk about myself. Like I'm not like the most interesting individual necessarily, but I at least want to be able to share a little bit around me and who I am.
Yes,
so you can have a feel for
the
that
point of a date.
Precisely. As I said, the like stimulating element to it, I think is good. Being the foodie I am, like if I went for a meal with somebody, I try to like small plate eats, like go for like tapas or sushi, because there's no pressure around somebody like eating, but I would kind of consider like, oh, if you're really, I don't know, for manners can be a thing for me there as well, like I'm gonna be
British
honest.
The fucking British, oh my gosh. Yeah. There were a couple of things that James was like, oh, you have to do this, like I didn't know to put your fork and knife beside each other on the plate when you're done. And like there were a couple of times I didn't pick up on it at first, because like he did not say it in a rude way at all, but like it was like the third time someone had like he'd asked me like, are you done? And I looked down at my plate that was clearly empty, and I'm like, yeah, of course, it was delicious. And he's like, oh, okay, I just don't think they realized because your fork and knife weren't together.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, here you go. And then like the second time we went out to eat, he was like, oh, did you like it? And I was like, okay. He's like, are you done? I'm like, yeah. He's like, oh, okay, because your fork and knife weren't together. I'm like, okay.
Yeah, if I was like further down on a date with, or like I've been dating them for a bit, I would start calling them out. Like, but there's still not just around like knife and fork and all of that sort of thing, cutlery. Like there's other things around manners in terms of like, how do you speak to a server? These sorts of things that play into it all.
Ali, I will devote my entire life to making a server love me. And I will, and if someone in my party is like not even just rude, but not over the top kind to a server, I will then maybe like apologize on his behalf behind his back. I have like, I am literally the person that's like, when they come over, they're like, can we get anything? I'm like, oh my God, no, this has been the most fabulous experience I've ever had in my entire life. You have been so wonderful, Derek, thank you so much for everything. This is just incredible. You've really just, they'll like read off a special and I'm like, oh my God, the talent. God, you just
amazing,
had to memorize all that. That sounds delicious. It's like something I don't want at all. I'm like, I'll have to think about that. That's special the way you said it. I might have to get it. Like I'm obsessed with impressing servers and making them think.
But it makes a big difference, because actually like how you treat that individual is just echoes throughout how you treat other people. So again, it comes into like being a bit of a red flag if someone's like really dismissive and like almost talks down someone. You're like, it's unattractive. How does that play into other things that you're doing in life?
Agreed.
I don't think there's like loads of red flags though that you can have on a first date.
Okay. All right. We're actually somehow so close to an hour.
Oh,
so I'm gonna make sure we get the good
five,
the good
some
questions.
Of the juicy ones.
This is good because I feel like I already know your answer. And so for anyone that's like struggling with this, which all women do before they go on a first date, like myself included, I'm like, what the fuck do I wear? So this person said first date outfits for girls. Are there anything that's like amazing? And is there anything that gives you the ick?
You know what? I'm actually going to throw a slight curveball in here. I think that one of the best first dates you can do is a walking date. And I'll give you my reasons why. One, because...
Wait, outfits?
Yeah, I know we're talking about outfits, but I'm getting into... Or is that another question?
Oh
elsewhere?
No. This is good. You're going to talk about the best first date you can go on is a walking date, because then there's
because
no pressure.
There's no pressure around what you wear. Like you can wear something nice. I mean, if you've got a great figure, maybe you want to go with like leggings because you might be thinking about what you're showing off, whatever. I don't know. I'm getting into it, whatever. but you can still look nice, feel good, being something you're really comfortable with. You're not going out being like, oh my God, I've had to buy a brand new dress. So that's where I think actually it's a really nice thing to be able to be relaxed in terms of what you're wearing.
That is so crazy, because as a woman, if someone asked me to go on a walking date for the first time, I'd be like, fuck. So like, am I supposed to put my hair in a ponytail? Does it look too aggressive if I have my hair down and it's fixed? If I wear makeup, is that fucking weird because we're on a walking date? So why would she have makeup to go on a walking date? Like, I don't know.
I think you can like balance out. You can get like a happy medium, and it can allow you that if it was morning, you might grab a coffee afterwards, or you're having a coffee while you're doing it.
Okay.
Or you kick on and then go have a drink. But so you can wear something that's like a mid-level. In terms of like, to answer just very specific on what the question was, because I gave my own answer to that.
Is there an ick?
Something that's a bit slutty, or like the other thing is it's not a good look. Like, fair enough, you want to like show off a little bit of like whatever assets you might have or you deem to have from a physical appearance, but wear something that is nice and you feel comfortable in and you look good in. Don't try and like, I say, just looking a little bit slutty is a no-go. The other thing for me, and like this, at the risk of sounding like a bit of a ass, is dress for your surrounding as well. Like, I have been on, I think it applies wherever you are, but like, I've been on a few dates where you're in a reasonably, let's say, like classy environment and a nice part of town, and you're wearing an outfit that is like completely out of like what that would be.
But where are her friends?
Yeah,
when my friends and I go out, I'll be like, don't wear that, we're going to XYZ. And if she was like, oh, I like this, I'd be like, yeah, we're going to XYZ. Like, where are her friends? Where are her friends?
Yeah, exactly. But give some advice around it. But I think, don't overthink it, but definitely do not go with like the...
Don't overthink it, but Ali has some very specific things
that you should also think about.
Okay. I don't know what this means. So what is a hinge rose? And what are your thoughts on getting one? Is that where you can pay to match with someone?
So you get, you're buying them, you get one rose a week. So that rose boosts you to the very top of that individual's like... section of likes.
What are your thoughts on receiving one?
I actually think it's a huge compliment, because the reason I think that is because I know that you got one a week, and it's like they have decided that I am that man.
I'm the rose.
And I think it's a very sweet thing to receive in the virtual world of apps and dating.
Okay, you can answer this one kind of quickly. What are your thoughts on what are some prompts that you like to see on dating apps? I know you said like people were like, don't just tell me be yourself on dating apps. Like, what are some things that you like if they're redesigning and reconfiguring their dating apps right now? What is something that guys are like, that's good?
I think,
or some things you're tired of seeing.
Well, this we're talking about this in terms of, it's not necessarily tired of seeing, but I was laughing about it with you beforehand, is on dating apps with in terms of girls' profiles, like you almost always see it. Like, I think you can have like 5 or 6 photos. There's almost always one clickbait. It's like the bikini photo, it's the booty photo.
Oh.
No one wants you to click on it though. I mean, it's big, big red flag. Can you
like the photos on
Hinge? I mean, you can like the photo so people know what you've liked on Hinge. So you're specifically saying, I like that picture of your ass. And it's like, it might be a great ass, but I would never like that, because I'm like, big red flag. They're going to be like, no, get out.
Do you like that the girls include a shot? So when I had a dating profile, I didn't have Hinge, I had Raya. Flex. But I'm just kidding.
I can't get onto Raya, by the way.
Raya was so fucking stupid. No guys literally ever talk to you. Don't get on Raya, get on Hinge. But whenever I have one, when I was creating my profile, I made sure there was like a photo that was like a bit Tatiana. But like, you're saying you think the girl should keep them, but just like, you're never going to like them.
Keep it there, because obviously it's, you know,
it's nice.
You know why you're doing it, but if any guys listen to this, like, don't go liking it, because that's the red flag. They do not want you to like that. No girl wants you to like it. They're like, steer clear of that. If you like it, they know what you're doing. But what would I like to see on them? I think for anybody's profiles, the ones that like really engage me are where you've like put a bit of thought into some of the answers. Like, all the girls who write like favorite drink, spicy margarita, it's like, I've seen that a million times. Like,
what if that is their favorite drink?
Well,
Ellie,
that's fine. Maybe that's being really unfair on that one, but there are a lot of them where it's
delicious.
Like,
drink,
it's delicious, and I love a spicy margarita.
What do you wish they would say instead?
I think just like, think about, maybe pick out one of, because there's lots of prompts that you can have on Hinge that
pick
a different prompt that allows you to go, you know what, like, I'm gonna put a tiny little bit of thought and effort into this, because then I'm getting some sort of I don't know, like feedback from what this person's like, and I can hook onto that, like I was saying earlier. And then you kind of get a little, before you've gone, okay, this person's just, I'm just basing it on attraction. And it's like, oh, there's clearly like a little bit of something about them, a bit of spunk there. They're interesting.
Do you think it'd be funny if someone said, what's your favorite drink? And they said the one where you're buying.
I mean, that is funny.
Okay.
It is funny.
I'm just
but
trying
again,
to,
but
if
like
I
you're thinking of
profile,
like something, you're thinking of like something amusing there. It's like, it's not just like,
Spicy Mark.
I like an Aperol spirit. It's like, okay.
Okay, do another fabulous drink.
And drinks that I love. I mean, I'm, you know, shit.
You know what, Allie, maybe you should do some inner work on this. No, I'm kidding. Yeah, okay, this is one that I feel like we could have a bit of a long stint conversation on. Actually, maybe not even that much, but we'll end it here. I want to know your thoughts on staying friends with / staying in touch with exes. And we could bring this even into a personal experience. Yeah, yeah. Actually, a lot of people ask me. The people that listen to this podcast also follow me on Instagram. And a lot of people saw that my ex, John, was at this event that we were all at, you, James, and all of us. Mm. And they were like, is that John? Is that John? I'm like, yeah, yeah, yeah. No, that's him. Of course it is. We're all friends with the same people. He and I have a wonderful, cordial relationship as friends. So I have my stance on it. But what are your stances on being friends and with your exes?
So I am friends with my exes, and like they in some form or another, like I suppose, revolve in my life. I think it's unless something terrible happens, like somebody's cheated on you, something worse, whatever it is, then I think it's actually important those people probably stay in some form in your life, because they've been probably fairly pivotal in terms of who you are and where you are and what you've got to.
Yeah.
But you know, I think it's recognizing how do you
What's the line
of like spending time with somebody or like dropping them a text? Like, I don't necessarily actively speak to any of the exes, like, but you know, I will probably check in with some people if I know something's been happening, or you see it on Instagram.
Sure.
Or I've had a scenario where when I was with my ex, another ex basically reached out and was essentially like, I really want to talk to you, I really want to pick your brains about my current relationship.
You were with someone and your ex said, I really need to pick your brain about my current relationship.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
you
yeah.
said, absolutely.
Yeah, I said absolutely, because I'd met the guy briefly. I was like, there's no like loss for me here, but you have to be like candid with your current, if you're in a relationship at that time, like that current person.
Honest.
Like be open, honest, why you're going to have that conversation.
What did she say, your current girlfriend?
To be fair, she wasn't actually that comfortable with it, but I was like, look, we're going to go for a coffee, like, there's nothing weird about this. And then I ended up like meeting the guy as well. And it all, anyway, they're now happily engaged.
That's nice.
But,
that's nice.
I think it's a nice thing to be able to like stay friends with them in some form, but it's just recognizing the line. Like
the respectful line.
The respectful line. Like if you're like, you know what, I'm going for like one-on-one drinks with this person, like either on the regs
Kill
or
you.
Just in general, be like, nah, that's not right.
Yeah, no, okay. All right. Allie, this has been an absolute pleasure and honor. Guys, I'm just going to, ladies, gals, I'm going to just remind you all that Allie lives in America. He is single. He is an absolute treat. And if you want to cry while watching the British Bake Off and also be with just a sturdy individual, Allie's your man. So where can we find you on Instagram, Allie? I'm just pimping you out to the world.
It is @bone_AS. That's the first time I've ever pimped myself out or shared a social.
@bone_AS. His full name is Alistair Stuart Bone.
That's correct.
But we call you Allie. So, oh, here's James. Oh, hello, James. Kate. James is like, yeah, funny and stuff. Oh, thank you so much for coming. I love you dearly. And
thank
I hear
so
that
much.
He's
Appreciate
making us
it.
Dinner tonight. So, gotta go.
I am.